Welcome to the Hospitality Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Turk. Join me as we dive into the personal stories of some of the world's best hospitality professionals. We follow the journey of their ups, downs, and wild turns to find out what it truly takes to make it in the amazing world of hospitality. Welcome to another episode of the Hospitality Mentor Podcast. And today, I'm very excited to have Vanessa James, CEO and founder of VJ Media and Food, Wine, and Fet founder. Vanessa, welcome to the show.
Hi, Steve. The one and only Steve Turk. I'm so excited to be on your podcast finally.
Well, I'm excited to have you here. And the day that I have a professional voice actor and voiceover artist, my voice is terrible, not from partying. Battling a cold because I wasn't going to miss this with you today.
I was going to say, I was hoping you were going to tell me that you narrated some amazing documentary over the weekend or something.
No, I watched a bunch of them in bed, but not that I did that. Okay. But today is a little bit different. Usually we're all hospitality here, but I want to talk to you because you are in entertainment. You are a Renaissance woman. You've got so many different things going on. And we both went to Florida State at the same time. Yeah, you see, she's got the Seminole chop for everyone out there. And I was excited to bring you on because you've been to my events. I could not make it to this event that we're going to talk about because I was out of town and I'm going to be there next year. But I want to start at the beginning of how you got to become this person that is a business owner, a Renaissance. How did it all begin for you before you got to Florida State? When you were in high school, was it something that you envisioned this is what you wanted to do? Or were you a DJ and doing parties and emceeing like I was doing little kid parties and bar mitzvahs? Or were you doing something else?
That's so exciting to know. No, I actually was going to be the next Robin Roberts, the Monday Night Football sportscaster. I loved football because my cousins. So when I immigrated here from Trinidad and from the USVI, which is where, my roots are, my cousins were obsessed with football. So I had no choice but to watch it because I spent all my summers there and it was all boys and just me. So I became a Joe Montana, San Francisco 49ers fan very early in life, Jerry Rice fan. And then decided at that point, you know what? I just loved how Robin Roberts would storytell, right, from the sidelines. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I want to do that. So that's really what got me started in broadcast and entertainment in mass media in that whole flow and discovering that, okay, I really like the way she tells, she really does play by plays from the sidelines and she's in the game, but she's not in the game because obviously she couldn't play. So that kind of got me fascinated about the whole process. And it led me to Florida State after applying at some other places around the country, including Northwestern. And I just was in Georgetown. And I said, you know what? I'm going to stay in the state and decided to transition up to Tallahassee. And then I fell in love with Florida State and got in there and got into the Dean Deckerhoff, internship program and really learned about sports casting from him. Obviously, he's a legend in the game. Mm-hmm. And then I was kind of just doing odd jobs. And I was working at a construction company, Holly Incorporated. Just trying to get, these coins up so I could pursue this sports casting career while I was getting, my degree. And I heard a commercial for a receptionist at a radio station. At that time, it was Clear Channel, which is now iHeartRadio. And I called and they were like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm at lunch at this construction company. And they're like, are you available for an interview in the next hour? And that's really how it started for me. I went, I interviewed, I started off as the receptionist at a local radio station and then made friends with everybody. I'm pretty friendly.
Yep.
And decided that, a program director at the time, Steve King, said, hey, come do these commercials for me. I need a spotter for these commercials. And it was sports commercials and also an array of different things. And he goes, you've got a great voice. And that's how it all kind of started. And he put me on the air. He put me on at 2 a.m. And that's where I got to make all my mistakes. And I actually had a little bit of a stutter. So I kind of broke my stutter there too. And I was like, okay, wait a minute. I'm talking to 1.4 million people, with this microphone. I like this. That's really got my passion in terms of transitioning from sports casting and still feeling like I was connected to it. But then my entire love for music and all of that really kind of blossomed from there.
So I want to rewind it here because you go, you're working construction, you hear a job.
I'm not working construction.
Or you're in the construction, you're answering. Okay. Yeah. Well, you're part of it. You're part of the industry there. You hear that there's a job. working for 100.7 The Beat. Was that the right channel?
100.3 The Beat.
100.3 The Beat.
I'm sorry. 100.7. You're right. 100.
I thought it was.
No, yeah. 100.3 is what I voiced.
I remember.
Now,
so 2 a.m. Yeah. Even though it might be late for many people here in College Town, we were all awake.
Oh, yeah.
We were all awake. What was it like for you like that? Do you remember the first time you actually like went live on air and it was like you had to speak?
I was a mess. I sweat through all of my clothes. I was terrified. It was just me in the studio and like, you know, one audio engineer at the time that became like good friends that I'm still in connection with today. But I specifically remember there's this club called The Moon. Do you remember The Moon?
I went to The Moon.
I went to The Moon too. And
I try to buy you a drink probably at some point. Exactly. Yes, that's what probably
definitely
happened.
Catching people coming home from The Moon and they'd be like, oh my gosh. So that's how things really got sparked. And then I was like, wait a minute. Well, like once you learn the you know, technical aspects of it. And I think that's where all the nerves came from. Cause when the mic's on, like all of a sudden, like the pressure's on you get nervous. But once you learn all the technicalities of it and you really learn to kind of just be yourself and realize, I actually had a mentor tell me, just act like you're talking to a girlfriend or just like act like you're talking to your cousin about sports, except now you're talking about music. Now you're talking about Usher and Rihanna and Beyonce. And that was easy because it felt more natural. And so that's when things kind of really, you know, shifted for me. And I realized, wait a minute, I could just, you know, be storytelling and really start to make some money talking to my friends across the city about things I cared about.
So how does that business work? Because I don't know much about it. So back then, I'm sure it's changed a lot over the years. But you're in Tallahassee, you know, smaller market. You're on the radio to a lot of people. You're at The Moon, right? I actually saw Armando Perez Pitbull, Mr. 305, there when he was first coming out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So when you're doing this, how do you make money? Is it just a salary or is it because you're going to events? Is it
It definitely was a salary job. At that time, I was so excited. I was making $23,000 a year, and I thought I was killing it. Yes, it was my first full-time job. And I remember John Hunt at the time, my former GM, was like, listen, you know, we're going to try this out, Vanessa. Here's what we can offer you. And I called my mom like, oh, my gosh, they offered me $23,000, Mom. You know, I was like 21 years old. It was huge for me. So no, it was a salary job. In addition to that, I started to learn about endorsements and learn about all these little gigs that you could make on the side as well, live remote broadcasts. And that's when things started to really flourish. And I'm like, wait a minute. I think that's where my entrepreneurial hat came in as well. I'm like, okay, this is great, this base salary, but also I can do all these little satellite things and also make money as well. So yeah.
So and you graduate,
transition to 48, transition to 56. And then I think I left Tallahassee making like $52,000, which was like unheard of for,
it's like
you
a,
know.
Yeah. It's like being a millionaire in Tallahassee.
It is.
So you're there. You graduate in 2001. And a lot of people are like, all right, I graduated. It's time to move on. But you hang out for another 4 years.
I do.
Is that something that you like consciously made that decision? Like, I like it here, I don't want to leave? Or did they convince you to stay after you graduated? How do you make that choice?
Well, by the time it was time for graduation, so I graduated, you know, again, was working at the radio station, but then I started to, you know, kind of dabble into the corporate end of things and started doing promotions and working in the promotions department. So I stayed for the job. I stayed because I got hired at the station to do multiple things. And then I got hired as their first female program director for The Beat at the time there. Wow. And that's when, again, things really trying, you know, I really started, I'd like to say career-wise, in corporate radio, from the receptionist all the way up to the program director, first female program director in the market, which was a big deal at the time, especially of color. And then again, it just kind of flourished from there. But yeah.
I love it. So you're doing that. 2005 comes around. You make a big move down the state.
Yes.
And you end up in Miami, but you're still, I think, with the same company, right? Like you mentioned, it was Clear Channel that became iHeart.
Yeah.
How does that happen? How do you come down to Miami?
Well, you beg your VP of operations and you say, listen, I am ready to move. I was done with Tallahassee. At that time, I was post-breakup. And I'm like, I'm ready to get the heck out of here. I had bought a townhouse. I rented it. It rented fairly quickly because it was in a great area. And I just decided, okay, you know what? It's time to move. So I reach out to my VP at the time and I say, hey, listen, what's open at MIB? Because that's everyone's dream is to do what they're doing radio-wise in a top 10 market, whether it be Chicago, Boston, LA, San Francisco, Miami, Atlanta. And I go, I'm ready to move because I had gotten offered, you know, a few gigs in other places. But I said, no, I don't want to go to Tupelo, Mississippi, you know, no hating on Tupelo, you know, but at the end of the day, it was time for me to move back home because that's where I had a lot of roots, a lot of Caribbean roots. I was traveling a lot, you know, visit my parents and friends that were still in South Florida. And then I just decided not to wait. So I actually left Clear Channel and then went to the Sun Sentinel for a little bit. And that was pivotal as well. I was there for a little bit in their marketing department for about a year before I got the call about their openings at the, you know, at the station here in South Florida that I proudly was the marketing director, music director, and midday host for, which is 103.5 The Beat, which is still on the air today.
Yeah. 103.5. Yeah. Everyone knows it down here. So you're on air at a major market, right? So you make this pit stop. I think it's important because a lot of people don't realize, like, you, the people who listen to this are looking about how to improve their career.
Sure.
And you made a move like, all right, it's time for me to go.
Yeah.
Sun Sentinel. Hey, I never worked at a newspaper.
You know when you know you got to go, right? It's time. Like, you feel it. And like, intuitively, I just knew it was time. It was Tallahassee can only provide you so much, especially if you're not in government or in sports there, right? So I decided that it was time. Yeah.
So you make your move down here. You're in Miami. You're at one of the biggest stations in Miami. And that's still when there was not much streaming going on. Like, you couldn't stream music. Like, you had to like plug in a weird tape deck to hear like your music on just like your iPod at that time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So everyone's still listening to you. What was that like when you come to a big city and people know your voice and know your name when you're in the city? How did that differentiate from Tallahassee?
Well, they didn't really know me here yet because I, so I came down and I went to work at the Sun Sentinel, and that's where I started to dabble in not just editorial work and as an assistant to an incredible mentor there, Tim Sumption, but that's, he threw me on camera as well. So a lot of stuff I just kind of got thrown into, right? And I just kind of went for it. I look back on my 20 years of, you know, career-wise, and it just was a lot of gumption, just like, okay, let me go for it and see what, you know, what sticks.
Yeah.
But at the Sun Sentinel, I was doing a lot of their, at that point, they were going digital, so they were starting to do some stuff with their .com, and they're like, hey, go stand over there and read this teleprompter script. And I was terrified. And it's funny because prompter still to this day is one of the elements of, like, I would say entertainment that I always continue to still polish and brush up on, because I always feel like now I'm definitely in flow working at a network here, you know, like where I'm doing that often. But before, it was like terrifying. So that's where I learned some editorial, you know, stripes and got some prompter under my belt before transitioning back to radio. I got a call. It was happy hour, Fort Lauderdale, downtown Fort Lauderdale. And it was from Mata Melendez at the time, who was a program director there. And she's like, hey, I have a gig for you. Are you available again to meet? And all of these radio opportunities are always like very kind of hush hush, because a lot of times when they're hiring somebody, they're often transitioning from somebody else, unless it's a brand new station that's launching. And they were doing a complete rehaul at that time. And she was like, hey, I've got multiple gigs for you. Would you be willing to take 3 jobs, not 1? So I'm from the Caribbean and we love multiple jobs, which is not just a thing. I think it's something that we definitely feel like we're always wanting to overcompensate. Maybe it's a cultural thing. So I took all 3, which in hindsight, I probably still would have, but I would have asked for way more money, right? Because I was so excited about the gig. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, at that time it was like 88K, which was the most money I had ever made. But in retrospect, I'm like, holy moly, did I undershoot my shot, right? So promotions director, midday host, and music director before becoming the PD was a lot on my plate. And I did it and you know, rocked it. But I was coming home at 10 o'clock at night every night and realized you should be asking for more money. So that's one of the big things when people ask for mentorship from me, especially when they're starting off and they're still in the corporate world. How much do I ask for, especially as a woman, especially as a woman of color? You've got to know how to position yourself, especially if you know you're really good, you know, to ask for what it is that you think you deserve and how to negotiate. And to this day, I still feel like I could be a better negotiator.
I love that tip. So let's just say we were in that room.
Yeah.
Right. And you were going back to that today, knowing what you know now. How would you have done that differently?
I think I would have done it differently by saying, I'll thank you for the opportunity. I will definitely get back to you. Not just saying yes on the phone ever. Right. No matter how good the opportunity is. Thinking about it and sleeping on it, and then removing the emotion from it and saying, like, when I sit with myself and it's just me and I'm working 10 to 10, what is the value of that, right? Now, obviously, they, you know, put a lot of, oh, you're going to get to do this. You're going to get to interview amazing people, Chris Brown, Usher, Rihanna, Mary J. Blige. That's great. But it also comes with you doing all the preparation for that, managing a staff of six, staying till 10 o'clock at night for music logs for the next day. So it's a lot. And so it's talking to other people, finding other people in your community that can help you and guide you through what each one of those positions should really be going for, getting that overall number, which at that time was probably like about 125K. And then, you know, letting them know, listen, the value of all of this work is this much money. And also letting them know that you're knowledgeable about that is very important, right? So that you don't get shorted. Mm-hmm. And then negotiating your way up to that number. So for me, I guess what I would have done different was exactly what I just said, but negotiated up to that number. So let's say they came back and said, okay, V, I've only got 106, right? Which is, I think, what I settled at the end, like years later, right? Before I finally exited corporate, I left at like 106.5. But I negotiated in paid, like extra paid vacations, an extra week of because I'm a huge Carnival person. So an extra week to be able to go to Trinidad for Carnival in the middle of February, which is sweeps for us in Radio Land, and just negotiating other things in endorsement deals and things like that, that I know could get me closer to the number that I wanted, right? For that value of all that work. So that's what I would say. Just, you know, sometimes it's not just money. Sometimes it's peace of mind. Sometimes it's bartered deals. Like for a lot of people in corporate, it's maybe it's a corporate car where they pay the insurance, they pay for the car, they pay for the cell phone. All that cuts down on your monthly bills, right? So that's probably what I would have done different. Just been a better negotiator.
Gosh, all around. I love that. For anyone negotiating anything right now, just rewind that last 2 minutes to really pick up a lot of tips in there.
Yeah.
That's really good. I love that. So you're there. You're doing 103.5. You're doing three jobs.
Three jobs, it's, Steve.
You're doing it for... My notes here, 5 years, it looks like. When do you start getting this kind of like entrepreneurial mindset? Like, all right, I've had enough of the corporate world, because this is what we're going to talk about as you transition. But, you know, because scary for a lot of people, you've always had that paycheck. You've always had that going on. How did that start coming up?
For me, it kind of just got tossed my way because I started to notice that iHeart was going digital, and that's when they had launched iHeart before I left, right? So it launched like not even 6 months prior. And I started to get feedback from other program directors because we talked to each other on conference calls every Friday at noon, we'd spend lunch hour together. At that time it was Zoom, but prior to that, it was, you know, and now it's Zoom, but prior to that, it was conference calls. We just get to hear each other. Mm-hmm. And that was like what everybody looked forward to because we get to run things by each other and ask questions. But it's also where I built a lot of camaraderie with people in my business and other markets, right? So, okay. And like obviously also those annual conferences and things like that. So in that, building relationships, which is the heart of my business, is really touching bases with them and saying, hey, I started this freelance voiceover lane in addition to doing all this PD, you know, and MD work and being on the air, because I was getting a lot of opportunities here in South Florida to voice, you know, things for different charities and car companies and like enterprises like that. So at the time, my mentor, Doug Turkel, was like, hey, V, come to my studio. This is after the conference call. Come to my studio and voice this quick, like headquarter Toyota clip for me or something like that. I need an extra voice. I said, okay. So I go there and he gives me the script and it takes me like 6 minutes to do it. It's like, but man, this sounds really good. He goes, okay, great. Send me an invoice, $150. I said, $150 for 6 minutes of time. You know, he goes, yeah, that's exactly how much the client has for those particular lines. So that's exactly what happened. I'm like, wait a minute, hold on a second. Again, I'm very entrepreneurial, like mindset in that way. And like very much thinking about side hustles because my parents are very much like, you know, ingrained in you as immigrant parents. Like you've got to make sure you've got your 401, but then you've got to have other streams of income and all of that. So it just kind of sparked from there. Okay, I love this voiceover thing, but also I can make extra money from it. So then I go, Doug, what's an invoice? I knew what invoices were, but I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to set up this LLC so I can invoice this man aside from, you know, BJ stuff. So that's when I started Vanessa James Media as a way to pay, to actually be able to legally send people invoices for all my freelance work. And that's really how it started. I specifically remember like starting my LLC, going to Sunbiz, getting all the articles of incorporation done. And also like, okay, what is this logo going to look like? And my graphic artist, Tamara, at the time, she created this logo, which I'm still using because I still love it. Years later.
I love that. I love that. So when does the official, like, all right, I've made it, I can make enough now, or I can leave? Or was it like, I am going to go make enough, so I'm out of here?
Oh, no, it was a layoff, Steve. It was a layoff.
There
yes.
you go. Full layoff.
Yeah. So 2002, I specifically remember it was May 15th, 2010. And they're like, hey, Vanessa, unfortunately, you know, at the time, the beat flipped. It flipped to like Latin contemporary. And they were like, we've got a great job lined up for you, though, in San Francisco. Lateral move, same exact positions, minus promotions. And you get to go over there, be on the air, and be their APMD. And it was that same money, right? And I'm like, hold on. But now that 106 in San Francisco is a lot different than 106 in Miami, right? So I said, no. I'm like, thank you so much for the opportunity. And I also, at that time, because I built so much camaraderie with different people in the industry, I knew whose job I would be taking if I took that job. Do you know what I'm saying? So yes. I'm like, no, it's okay. I, you know, I'm good. I didn't take it. I started Vanessa James Media again that June. So a month later, I had started it. And I just started to lean on all of those people that I had been on those conference calls with. And I'd be like, hey, Rob Miller, who, so clients were also, I call them clients now, but at that time they were colleagues, reaching out to me to voice their stations ahead of time. So I had left WMIB with four stations under my belt. I was already voicing. And it just kind of tumbled, you know, kind of like took off from there in terms of just program directors talking to each other and go, oh, she's voicing my station in this is this market, this market, this market. So I left with my first station, like on my own, was KTU New York, which people are like, that is crazy. But I launched in, you know, my company with the number one market and the heritage station in like in that market. So yeah,
kind of. So it was meant to be
from there. Apparently it was meant to be.
So what were those like kind of first years like? Because look, as business owners, a lot of people don't get like you only eat what you kill. You got to go hunt.
You got
to
go hunt.
So if you're not hunting, you're not going to be eating. So what was it like for you? Because you didn't have a chance to ramp up, not knowing that that layoff was going to come. What was it like when you had to ramp up quickly?
It was super tough. And I'm not going to tell you that I ramped up quickly. I was like super in my professional grief, which I did a blog on that's still on my site to this day that people still always email me about because no one talks about professional grief. So meaning that, you know, you had to lay off your staff and leave because you didn't take the other job. Now your phone that's going off, you know, the hook because everybody thinks they have access to all this fun stuff that you get to give them all the time. Tickets to this, you know, flyaways to here, floor seats for this. Now you don't have all that access. So now like your phone barely rings. So all of that was going on emotionally, plus dealing with, you know, launching this new company. But I definitely go back to like the grit and gumption, which is clearly in me just as a person. I was like, okay, it's time to ish or get off the pot, right? And it just was time. And so I used the summer of 2010 to get all of my ducks in a row. So LLC, logo creation. And then I leaned on like what I do best, which is like intimate, just natural connection with people and just reached out to, first of all, a mentor of mine, Sam at the time, her name's Baby Sam. She just was like, girl, you are always going to be in demand because you do, you know, you treat people well. She would always tell me that. So people always remember how you treat them and how you do business. And so they don't forget that. So she just was like, go take a vacation, go to Paris, take a vacay, relax. I didn't go to Paris. I think I just went to like the Bahamas or something, you know, and relax and then come back and recalibrate. So that vacation, that travel really helped me disconnect. And when I came back fresh. And so I came back and just put together like a blueprint. Okay, here's if I could work with, you know, the top 10 people that I know right now, who would I email? Who would I call? And I started to cold pitch like that. And I was cold pitching program directors. I stuck in radio and said, hey, I'd love to voice your station. Here's my demo. So I had to get the demo ready. All those little things that you have to get like your kit ready before you can push it out to the world. And that's what I did. And I just kind of pushed it out to the world and saw what stuck. But then again, programmers were just starting to call and going, hey, V. And they knew me. So it was easy to be like, VJ, okay, this is what I got. You know, boom, South Carolina, San Francisco, Boston. Like these are stations that are 12, 15 years old under my belt that I'm still voicing from a long time ago. And what happens is when one program director talks to another, they go, who's voicing that? Who is that? Who's that? Who's, who, you know, who's doing that for you at KT New York? Oh, okay, great. I want her. You know, send me her info. Boom, boom, boom. So that's kind of how it springboard from there. But that voiceover side hustle business quickly turned into like just my bread and butter, but it allowed me to have flexibility because you could bring your mic anywhere, right? So I'd bring my mic and travel and start kind of leaning on all the other things that I learned how to do over my course from Florida State and transitioning down to Miami, which was editorial work, you know, writing, all that type stuff. So all of that kind of falls under this media umbrella. That's VJ Media now, but that's really kind of where it's, you know, it kind of started with throwing spaghetti on the wall, just like a lot of entrepreneurs seeing what stuck.
I love this kind of stuff. This is all what I love, but it gets scary too. Like, look at my voice today. Do you ever have this, like where you got to record something?
Oh,
you can't 100%. Get paid because you sound like me?
Yeah, 200%. Well, because here's the thing. If you're doing it professionally, you learn how to stay away from that. And so what happens is I'm taking all the precautions daily, weekly to get to not, you know, have horse. But if I do, you just have to let clients know, like, this is not working today. It's your instrument. You have to take care of it. So warm saltwater goggles, which I tell people all the time, do not underestimate the power of salt water because it cleans things out and it helps things kind of stay fluid, and then hydrate. And then lozenges and honey, all that stuff really does work.
All right. I'm getting on it. I have to give a speech.
Get
in two
on
days.
It. Do
I have
you?
To give a speech. Yeah.
Oh, I got you. I got
two
you.
And a half hour
and
talk.
The remedy.
To the Mandarin Oriental. I got to get them pumped up.
Oh, big speech. Gorgeous venue.
Yes, okay. So I got to get them fired up.
Yeah, get you right.
But anyhow, I love this part of your journey. So you're in it. Now you're a business owner, which you've been doing for 14 years. You're building your business. When do you feel like, all right, it's usually never for me at this point, but where do you feel like, all right, I'm at this point where I'm good. Like, I'm going to continue being a business owner. I'm not going back to the corporate world.
When I started, so I started off with 5 stations. So I was able to pay my rent and pay like the basics with that money. But again, I had savings. So I kind of, you know, was some allocating money and reallocating. I think I realized when I wasn't going to go back to corporate, when I could stand on my own as an entrepreneur and make money. And then I was getting called when I started to, you know, get called for more things and started to learn how to properly negotiate my rate. So that I'm like, wait a minute. Okay. 5 stations at that point, $800 and $1,000 a month. It was enough to at least keep me afloat. And that transitioned to 32, right? So again, I think when I hit my 10th station, which was Boston, I go, okay, this is real now. Now I have to start investing back into it, which is buying new microphones, a professional studio, taking workshops, networking, going to conventions. That's when I started to really kind of like just get the cylinders moving, right?
Well, I think it's so cool. So you start continuing to grow.
Yeah.
You start doing a lot of voiceovers for radio. You've been doing TV now too. Like, I hear you on the CW. I just saw that out there. You've been doing a lot of different stations. You're doing basketball.
Yeah.
You're doing a ton of things. So you're coming back to that Robin Roberts almost. You're not on air, but you are on air.
I can't wait to interview her one day. It's coming. I'm manifesting that.
It's going to. We're going to put it out there today. Yeah. It's going out in the airwaves.
Okay.
So you're doing this. And then you start getting into some events here, right? You've been putting we talked a little bit about this, but I want you to kind of tell me, how did events start coming into this world of yours?
So events start coming into this world when I actually was the music director for this event that used to be here in South Florida called Hispanicize. And so when I went to it's a 4-day conference. At that point, it was a U.S. Latino Trends conference in the country, the biggest. It's where brands came to connect with, at that point, influencers, which was just budding. 2013, 2014, the influencer world was just really getting, you know, serious, where brands were like, okay, we need to start thinking about these people really seriously because they're moving the needle for us. And so going and kind of having a back, you know, like a front row seat, but also getting to be backstage and see how everything was working, I'm like, wait a minute, there's a pocket missing here. Because what I realized in South Florida was, as multicultural as we are, we don't connect. Everyone stays in their own pockets and buckets, right? So it'll be, oh my gosh, you live in North Broward. Oh my gosh, that's so far from Kendall. I can't go all the way down there, you know, that type of thing. So long story short, I decided, okay, I need to put something together where I can connect all the different people and get them out of their pockets in media, right? So photographers, television producers, writers, you know, people in editorial from the newspaper world of mine, from radio, from TV, they need to be connecting. There needs to be, you know, an opportunity for more inclusivity and for them to connect. So that's when I created my first event, which was very scary, VJ Media Mixology. I did my first one in 2012. And I can't believe it. I cannot believe that I it's been since 2012 that I've been producing events. But yeah, and it was 200 people and they were so excited to get out on a Thursday night and meet each other. And then that was the first time that, so I had, at that time I was working with Chevy and I met them through Hispanicize and they sponsored my event. They gave me $3,000 at the time to bring their cars and to activate with me. And I go, oh my gosh, you know, so cocktails, it was Bombay Sapphire Gin. I'll never forget my first sponsor and Chevy for their brand new Chevy. It was their Urban Drive series. And I got to be the person in the market to bring everybody together to celebrate over Bombay Sapphire cocktails and Chevy and in like talk about media, but also connect on other things. And it's so exciting because that turned into 7 seasons of that. I'm bringing it back this year because it took a hiatus during the pandemic. But I love those type of events, like in terms of connection, because people connect with each other and then they spring their own collaborations and connections from that. And that's what it's all about.
See, I love that you came to my first event that I did my own for the Hospitality Mentor.
Absolutely.
And that meant the world to me because we didn't really know each other at that time. And I feel like I have known you for a long time. So it meant a lot.
I've been cheering you on, Steve.
We got to give a shout out to our PR director, Ceci Serrato, who's put us together.
She
brought you over. So if you're looking for a PR director, make sure to check out Ceci Serrato.
She's unavailable.
Communications.
She's booked and busy. She's got two really, really demanding clients. She doesn't have time.
One of the best, you see. I hope you hear this, Ceci.
I see that, yeah.
So you're going your events, and you talked about bringing something back.
Yeah.
You just brought back one of your successful events.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about this because it's Food, Wine, and Fete.
Yes.
Give us this 30-second download for people that don't know what this event is, and we'll talk about how you created it.
Sure. So 30 seconds. Food, Wine, and Fete is the all-inclusive Soca celebration. Soca is a huge part of my community as a Trinidadian woman who loves carnival. But again, kind of springboarding from media mixology, springboarding from Women of Impact, which is another satellite small dinner that I do every fall, and really finding that, okay, wait a minute, there's another gap in the market that I can fill and bringing people together to celebrate. But now really leaning on my Caribbean community that's here in South Florida that, again, often gets kind of underserved. And, you know, we concepted it in 2019 as a way to celebrate all of the Caribbean chefs that I literally have traveled around the Caribbean and here in South Florida ate their amazing food. And I'm like, they're you know, rarely at the big food and wine festivals for one reason or the next. I'm like, let me fill that gap, but do it the way that I want to do it. And I really kind of put something together. I said, if I could step out for one night and have an amazing time and eat delicious food, sip amazing cocktails and get a, you know, like a, in an all-inclusive experience, what would that look and feel like? And that's what Food, Wine, and Fete is. It's pretty much a celebration of all things Caribbean and an incredible Soca Fete experience, which I love. And it's incredibly successful. Our second year back after our hiatus in 20, this is way past 30 seconds. And in 2019 was our launch year, our, you know, inaugural. We took a break and brought it back this 2024 to a sold out 850 patrons and an all-inclusive electric affair on the sands of historic Virginia Key Beach. It was really awesome. We ended it with a drone show. You missed the drone show.
I know, but here, we've got an image of it over here.
Yeah,
it looks awesome. Look how packed it is.
It is.
On the sand, which I love. Yeah. I love the vibe. You got everything you would want in a great event. And people showed up and the weather held out. I was a little worried about the weather.
It was a scorcher, Steve.
Yeah, it was very hot. I think it was like the first heat warnings of the season. And for listeners, if you were showing this on the YouTube channel, you can come and watch and see what it looks like. And you can always check it out online on her webpage as well.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to put on at a successful event.
Yeah.
People don't realize like, oh, I'm just going to say I'm having an event and 800 people will show up.
No. And I pay.
And pay to go. And it was not, it was a good value for the ticket, but it's not a low price ticket, right? Compared to some other things. But people came and you sold out. So what was it? Give us a couple of the how-tos. Like, it's one thing to have an idea. A lot of people have ideas.
Sure.
How did you actually get this rolling?
I got it rolling because I did a lot of market research. I'm all about market research. I will fly to the island and research and see what it is like to stay in that fabulous all-inclusive five-star hotel and report back. Right. I will go to the Caribbean and experience all their carnivals and then report back. Right.
It's tax deductible, too, I think.
Exactly. And so that's, you know, so we did, again, about 15 years of research. When I say that, I mean, going to other experiences and really seeing, OK, this is what's missing. And also building a lot of camaraderie along the way. So with chefs, with DJs, with artists, with musicians, so that when it was time for us to launch, it was easy to call on those people and go, hey, this is what I'm doing. You know, we talked about this. I'm really doing it now. Are you in? You know, would you be willing to, you know, support And of course, make sure that, you know, it was something that I could afford. And we created a blueprint and said, this is what we are wanting to do, and understanding this is what the city permits cost. Here's how far in advance you have to book this. First of all, you got to get your date. Then you got to, first of all, back it up. You got to get your trademark. Okay. Ooh. Get a trademark, whatever it is that you are going to spend all of this time until the wee hours of the morning, you want to protect it. So first and foremost, protect the brand. So we purchased the website, purchased all that stuff, did our trademark. That trademark time took us time to get all of our ducks in a row, because it took about a year. Because of the words food and wine, it took a little longer than most trademarks are between 6 and 9 months, right? So ours was about a year and a half before we got that trademark. And then once we got it back, we're like, okay, you know, let's go. Deion Sanders style. And we just did it. And so that came with finding a location and a date, right, to create this experience, and then building block like everything else. So again, sound, stage, permits, trusses, all the things, Steve, all the things. You're bringing back all the emotions. Scary. Of it. Yeah. And then, you know, touching bases with chefs, touching bases with brands that I've worked with for the past 20 years and saying, hey, I'm doing this. Are you interested in this? Is this something that you like to tap into? And then seeing what stuck. But what stuck was everyone that we called was like, yes, I'm in. I want to do it. Let's, you know, so it was just really exciting to see that people understand that there's value in a person from the Caribbean having their own, you know, being underserved, and you being able to tap in and connect with them because they've got a lot of spending power.
Yeah. You created something for you as the other part, too, which I love, right? I think you're scratching your own itch.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, like I tell people too, like you have to front a lot of money, and you got to make sure you're like, I have to pay a lot of people to show up and make sure get things. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because this is a big event, right? Like you're doing a lot of things up front. Are you raising money? Are you paying this all on your own? Because that is, you know, a big time thing to do.
Yeah. So it's myself and my partner, Marcos. We both put in our own capital. We fronted our own capital. Now, we obviously knew that we needed to hit this benchmark of tickets to be able to pay ourselves back and break even. Mm-hmm. That we did this year. But first year out, we didn't, right? So again, I was leaning on a lot of connections, and especially in travel and spirits that I had made throughout the years that came up, that were like, okay, I want to see, but I don't have any dollars, but I'll barter, right? So I'll come and I'll do a big presentation. And that there's so much value in that, and those connections and bartering, because again, it allows you to, it's twofold. It allows them to see the value in the people, but it allows the people to see the value in the brand as well. So
yes,
it was a lot of front money, and we kept getting tapped by a lot of people that wanted to invest. And hey, you know, are you in need of a venture capitalist? We're like, no, like intuition wise, I just felt like this is something I can afford, because I've been strategizing for a decade to make sure I have enough money to build things on my own. Obviously within reason, not just throwing your whole savings in there. Right. Yeah. But making sure that you have money to make those to take those calculated risks, and leaning on a lot of connections and travel and spirits and wine that I had built to be able to say, okay, I'm tapping in. Would you like to tap in with me and let's do it. And so all those kind of collision points come together to bring Food, Wine, and Vet back to the market in 2024, because again, it had been on a 4-year hiatus. So I had to, you know, kind of reintroduce everybody back to the brand again. That's why the social media is super, I won't say it's aggressive, but it's super, what's the word?
It was present. I saw it.
Very present and very active. Yeah. And even in off season, like, you know, we're not taking a break. It's definitely an event that's annual, sure, but it's also a 360 platform connecting people to the Caribbean that, you know, can't go at the moment, but maybe they're like, okay, wait, I do want to go to St. Martin and go to that chef's restaurant and go to the carnival and do things beyond sand and sea and hotel, right?
Yeah. And I love that you involved all Caribbean islands in this, right? Like you had everyone involved. How did you build those connections? How did that happen?
Well, a lot of press trips, and that kind of falls back on my editorial side of things too. A lot of press trips, a lot of inviting them to events like Media Mixology, inviting people like Ceci, like Linda from the Lowe's, that are like, what are you doing again? Okay. Cause you know how to bring people together, Vanessa. So we want to tap into those people, and just really having them see the value, you know, for instance, for Ceci, when she was at Palace Resorts for quite some time, she understood the value because I would invite her to things. And so she's like, okay, I'll give you a trip to give away at the event, you know, and there's so much value in that. So who doesn't want to go to Mexico to stay at a fabulous 5-star all-inclusive LeBlanc or, you know, so again, though, so it kind of, you know, comes together in layers like that, let's say.
I love it. So you're building those connections. You got everyone supporting this year. Like you said, break even, but I think that's a huge win because it was an amazing event. It was covered everywhere. I saw you on Deco Drive. I was proud of you.
Thank you.
I love seeing that. And so do you have the date already set for next year? Is it like a date that you're locking in every year for around the same time?
We're doing around the same time. We're looking at late April, early May. No date yet because I want to make sure that, you know, there's a couple things in terms of Caribbean satellite events that we want to make sure that we can support that don't overlap. So we'll know in the next couple of weeks, but we're definitely aiming at spring 2025. Late April.
Maybe not as hot, hopefully.
Maybe not as hot. And you know, if I could give another tip to a business owner who's putting like events together like this, you definitely want to make sure that you measure the marketplace to make sure that you're not overlapping with things. Not to say that you can't do something on, having competing events in one weekend. But at the end of the day, if I'm doing something where I know my audience is going to be focused on other things, maybe not do that weekend. So we strategically stayed away from like F1 weekend.
Right.
You know, it's a giant beast now, you know, and it took them some time to get here, but F1 weekend, we stay away from Mother's Day, things where we know our audience is not going to be, you know, focused. So making sure that you have as much as you can, right? Create something where it's something that they can't say no to. They want to go because they don't have any conflicts. And that's what I try to think about myself when I'm putting this together. I'm like, okay, I probably wouldn't want to go because of that. Just F1, but the traffic, right?
Yes.
So again, it goes back to thinking about your patron. And that's really where I start and end everything in terms of really understanding who my customer is and making sure I'm super serving them.
What is the one thing that you looked at this year? Like, all right, I'm going to tweak that for next year. Is there something that sticks out like clearly?
Yeah. If I could tweak one thing, it would be the time just because it was so hot. So we are moving from a 3 o'clock start to a 5 o'clock start to kind of take the pressure off that heat. And we're going to transition to, you know, 5 to 11, which I think is a really nice sweet spot.
Nice.
So definitely the timing of the event, push it back just a little bit. It gives our staff also more time to recalibrate, take showers, you know, and hydrate before it's time to like welcome everyone. But probably just that, along with obviously more brands, more ice. And we had a lot of food left over. So we tapped into this charity, LifeNet for Families this year that we could donate a lot of things to. So probably just making sure that, you know, there's better logistics to donate all the unused items to them. So things like that, small things.
No, those are little tweaks.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And I was really upset I had to miss it. But I will be there for sure.
2025. Next year.
I saw you and Ceci and Linda and other people I knew dancing, and I was ready to be there. With my wife, so we'll be there.
Well, we gotta bring it then, Steve. You and your
I'm
wife,
ready.
You gotta bring it for the Turks.
I'm ready to go.
Okay.
So now we've talked about a lot of things here, but this show, The Hospitality Mentor, you gave us some great advice on a lot of things already.
Yeah.
But if young Vanessa was coming out of Florida State and was joining your team, what advice are you giving her today if she was starting out in this industry of entertainment?
Absolutely. Three pieces of advice. One, make sure that you are a person of your word. If you say you're going to do it, because the people that you're going to be working with in this industry, when you are impeccable with your word, you will always be in demand. You will always be in demand. Follow up, follow through, and be a person of your word. Those would be my three. I think also it's really important to trust your gut in things, because a lot of times back, you know, when I was, let's say 22, 23 years old, or even like 30, right? Where I was like really kind of starting to get into flow. I wish I would have trusted myself more as an entrepreneur, went for things, not sat on ideas, ran things by people because, you know, I was insecure, worried about, oh my gosh, if I run this by them, are they going to steal this idea? Well, if you trademark it and you do what you need to do, then you don't have to worry about that, right? So at the end of the day, obviously protect your ideas, protect your intellectual property, but don't try to do things alone. Very important to run things past people and understanding that collective collaboration is so much better than doing it all by yourself. Hire people to do things, hire a PR person so you don't have to be pitching yourself. Hi, I'm doing this event, you know, no. So understanding like what your strengths are probably would be my number one. and hiring people, you know, that understand your vision to help you execute those strengths. And if you're a solo entrepreneur and maybe you don't have events and you're just, for instance, you're in hospitality and you're looking to, you know, do something where it's you as the person, just make sure you have your ducks in a row in terms of making sure that you have your items trademarked again and all of those things before you step out into the world, and understanding, okay, this is the vision for myself, but I know that I'm going to have to be malleable and have some flexibility in terms of how I get there. It's not a straight shot. There's going to be some exits, but then you can hop right back on if you're super connected to the vision.
Yeah, that's great advice that you gave me. A lot of pointers today that I got to work on. One in particular that I wrote down here that I need to focus on, which I'll tell you off the air.
Oh, okay. I was waiting for it.
I can't say, because it might get me in trouble here. So okay. I got to make sure I take care of that one. But if somebody wants to connect with you, Vanessa, you've given us so much awesome info, and maybe you know somebody wants to reach out to you. What's the best way for them to do that?
Best way is tapping in via online at VanessaJamesMedia.com, across all platforms at Vanessa James Media, and of course on LinkedIn at Vanessa James.
I love it. Mm-hmm. And now I got one last request.
Sure.
This is a request now. You don't have to say yes. But I need a Vanessa James sign off of the Hospitality Mentor episode today. Can you give me one?
Sure. Ooh. Okay. Let me hydrate. Okay. You're tuned in to the Hospitality Mentor with host Steve Turk. Catch us on all streaming platforms today.
I love it. Listen to that voice. That's a professional. This voice here, trash. This voice there, professional. This is what I love. Well, Vanessa, it means a lot to me that you joined us all today. You shared so much great advice to all of us. I appreciate you being so open, and I'm very grateful you joined.
This podcast is brought to you by Biscayne Coffee. Biscayne Coffee was founded with a giving spirit and a big idea to enjoy delicious coffee roasted in Miami while helping save Biscayne Bay and the animals that live there. As a former food and beverage director, I can assure you these are some of the best quality beans on the planet. 10% of every coffee sold is donated to nonprofits to help preserve Biscayne Bay for all to enjoy. Visit BiscayneCoffee.com today and use promo code MENTOR at checkout to save 10% on your first order. Drink good coffee and create a good outcome.